Before we get going, I just want to tell you this is a big week for High Performance. We release the High Performance Daily Journal, and also we announce the 2023 venues and dates for the High Performance Live Tour. To get all the information, just go to thehighperformancepodcast.com. That's thehighperformancepodcast.com. Hi there, I'm Jake Humphrey, and you're listening to High Performance, our conversation for you every single week. This podcast reminds you that it's within your ambition, your purpose, your story. It's all there. We're just here to unlock it by turning the lived experiences of the planet's highest performers into your life lessons. Myself and Damien Hughes are about to speak to one of the most impressive sports people on the planet so they can be your teacher. Remember, this isn't about high achievement or high success. It's celebrating the real stuff. High happiness, high self-worth, high self-care. And that's exactly what we discuss on today's High Performance Podcast.
I think it's about me then going forwards into that pressure environment, that competition or event or whatever it is, that I've done all I can. And I think when you do that, pressure does lift slightly. It doesn't lift completely, but it lifts slightly, because actually there was no more that I could do in that period leading up to the competition, or there's no more I could do literally on the day of the competition. I've checked everything off. It wasn't sustainable, almost having that mask up. I think I didn't realise at the time, but one day that's going to come tumbling on you and it's going to start crashing. And I think it got to a point where it did. So that made me fall into this rut, and I just struggled with it. I just felt completely lost, didn't know what to do. Motivation was so low, and I think motivation for me being low was quite hard to deal with. I felt sluggish, I felt drained, tired every single day. It's a mental game. And that's where you see in sport, especially, but in any pressured environment, the most talented people in the world that would win every day in the training gym crumble under that pressure, because it's a mental game.
So today we welcome Max Whitlock, the most remarkable male gymnast that this country has ever seen, one of the most impressive Olympians that we've ever had, a man who has every single year, year after year, focused on winning, whether it's at the Commonwealths, whether it's at the Europeans or the Worlds, or of course, at the Olympics. Max Whitlock has become one of the go-to golden boys for Team GB in the Olympics. But here's the truth. Even someone who's achieved all that he has, even someone who has all that he still struggles. He still suffers. And whether it is Danny Cipriani, whether it's Tyson Fury, whose episode will be out very soon, or whether it's one of the many, many people that have joined us on this podcast to reveal the truth about their mental health challenges, I'm so excited and pleased that we're able to finally have these kinds of conversations. So here we go then. This is Max Whitlock telling us the recent challenges that he's had with his mental health. And I think it's important to point out that, you know, this is something that he's in the middle of at the moment. This is not something that Max is able to process over 2 or 3 years and then reflect on. This is something that he is living with at the moment, something he is challenged by at the moment every single day, but also something that, as you will hear him say in this podcast, has given him the clarity to make sure that the next time he walks out at a major tournament, he does so with less fear than ever before because of the path that he's walked recently. Listen, I really hope that if you're struggling, or if you know people who are struggling, this podcast provides a great help. Let's welcome to High Performance Olympic champion Max Whitlock.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Let's start with what high performance means to you, Max.
I think for me it's a tricky one because as a person I always advise and always try and do as much as I can myself in terms of never comparing to others, which is becoming increasingly more difficult nowadays with social media and everything like that. But I think when it comes to performance, I think it's measured, and I think you kind of, if you're labelled or you're seen as a high performance individual or group, I think it is excelling above others in the same field. I think it has to be. But I think one of the biggest points is doing it consistently. So doing it and sustaining it. So it's never seen as maybe a one-time thing or it could have been a fluke. Like, I think it has to be something that it's almost seen like that person or that group have got a method. They've got this, what they do, whatever they do, it works and it's sustainable.
So for people listening to this who have great days and not so great days, yeah. What advice would you give them regarding consistency? How did you find it and keep it?
Consistency is really difficult because I think a lot of people look in, and from the outside looking in, they can easily look at athletes and look at people that have achieved a lot of results and a lot of success throughout their whole career and just think that it's fine and dandy and they've, you know, every day is successful and every day looks good and fine. But knowing that, I think that one big tip is that knowing that it's not like that. Everyone is human. Everyone's going to make mistakes. Nobody's perfect. Nobody knows all the answers, I think, is a key thing. But just trying to have a routine in your day. For me, I think I live for routines. Gymnastics is, I go out there, I perform routines. But I probably do get a bit obsessive when I'm outside the gym. You know, routine is how I structure everything. So when I go to competitions, it's completely based and it's completely the same. It's a mirror image of how I go into training in the gym.
Talk us through it.
So I think it's almost, it goes into the tiny details of, you know, if you was to go into my gym bag, everything's where I put it, everything's, you know, I know where everything is. So a lot of people sometimes their gym bags would look a mess. Like they'd have stuff, they'd have their guards, they'd have their gym shoes, everything will just be all bundled into one.
Yep.
Mine's all laid out, I'm organized, I'm like, it's all set like that. And I think everything's set like that. Me going into competitions, me going into pressured environments, uncomfortable environments where you're not feeling kind of settled or your nerves are at an all-time high, I've checked off everything that I can do. You know, everything I've done, so preparation's done, I'm as consistent as I possibly could be. I know I've worked as hard as I possibly can throughout this whole build-up. But I've checked off everything. In my head, you know, there's no kind of, you know, the saying, like, no stone left unturned. Like, I've done everything. And I've done everything the same as the way I normally prepare for a training session or a practice competition. I go into a competition ready, in that sense.
So we'll come back to that in a moment, but how do you avoid that falling into superstition?
It's almost hard to avoid superstitions because I think you get into a pattern of, you know, I suppose if something works, you move forward thinking of what you've done that time, it works for the next time. So then you fall into a pattern of thinking, right, I need to do that and do that because that's what I've done last time. And if I don't, then it won't go the way it should. So it's kind of hard. But for me, I just try and think about the kind of the technical aspect of it in terms of getting everything lined up, in terms of what I'm doing and how I'm doing it, what times I'm doing it, and getting everything ready and organized. But then doing everything, so recovery will be the same time, means I'll be doing everything exactly the same. And if I can do that as much as I can, as much as I can control, I think it's about me then going forwards into that pressure environment, that competition or event or whatever it is, that I've done all I can. And I think when you do that, pressure does lift slightly. It doesn't lift completely, but it lifts slightly because actually there was no more that I could do in that period leading up to the competition, or there's no more I could do literally on the day of the competition. I've checked everything off and I'm ready to go. And the only thing I can go and do is my best shot. And I think that's the mindset that I've had for pretty much every competition. I think that was kind of something that I've learned, that how I compete best, and that's what I do.
Which reminds us of when we did an interview with Tom Daly.
Mm.
He spoke about the methodology that's similar to you. But he added in a really fascinating element where he spoke about conducting a pre-mortem as part of that preparation as well. of working out what are all the things that could go wrong that could kill performance.
Right, okay.
So that way, if he felt that that was an important part of his routine, that if he then anticipated it, if it happened, he also felt he could deal with the worst that could go that way. Do you?
I don't. It's an interesting point. I think everyone works differently.
Yeah.
But I think maybe he's gone through learnings that have led him to think in that way, that that actually helps him now in his situation. So I think I've always tried to stay on the side of the fence that's, you know, a prime example in Tokyo before my final, my Olympic pommel horse final, was the most nervous I've ever felt. You know, pressure's all-time high, expectancy was at all-time high. The whole day, so my final was at 7 p.m., the whole day I was literally battling in my head, trying to stay on the positive side. Negative sides slip in, like potentially you could muck up on this, potentially you could muck up on that, all this stuff. That's only natural, but for me, at that time in my career, I was batting it away. I was trying to keep that to the back of my mind as much as I possibly could. I think for him to be able to say that he just confronts that head on and almost prepares for that side of it, that's quite impressive in one way.
So invite us in then to that moment of pressure, because we've had so many of our high-performing guests that would cite you and what you do of preparing for that one moment in a four-year cycle as the ultimate of high performance. So invite us in. What does pressure mean at that moment? What are the kind of things that is creating it? And then tell us, how do you mitigate against them?
I think the types of pressure for me, it's interesting because it's changed as I've, you know, progressed through my career. I think if you take it back to London 2012, I had pressure on my shoulders, but I was 19. I was kind of a youngster going in. I wasn't expected to produce any results. So for me, it was almost just the pressure of just giving it a best shot and hopefully it pays off. That's, looking back, is now a really, you're in a huge advantage if you're in that position. That position is one of the best positions to be in, because if you work well under pressure and you've just got that little bit on your shoulders and you're just going and giving it your all, that's really dangerous in a competition environment. But as I kind of progressed through the four-year cycle from London to Rio Olympics in 2016, there was a small change in terms of me and Scott, my coach, we was on a mission on those 4 years, and I wanted to prove something 4 years later. I got results on that cycle, which then basically the pressure times by 10 pretty much. So there was a lot of pressure going on my shoulders going into Rio.
Explain the results that added to the pressure. How did that work?
So for example, in that cycle, so London 2012, I come out, we got team bronze. I got an individual bronze, which was huge, 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 huge. And I think, you know, going in, I was never expected to do that. It kind of blew up for me and then kind of acted as a springboard. And I really kind of used that result to really push and spur me on. So 2013 was successful, 14, it almost rolled on. 2015, I made history in getting the first men's gold medal at World Championships. And it was massive. But what that done was then the Olympics was coming around the following year. So then the pressure ramped up, because I thought if you could do it at Worlds, then you could go and you can have the potential to do in Rio, which that was my target. My target was always to be in a position to gain a title, an Olympic title. But getting there, the pressure was really on, really, really on. And it was a really interesting scenario, because I'm not sure if you watch or remember it, but that final day, I was lucky enough to make two finals, the floor and the pommel horse. I was never expected to do anything on floor. I was going to be amazed if I got a medal. When I got gold, it was crazy, but I had to refocus because my main target was pommel. But what it done was it took loads of pressure off of me. So pommel was coming up, but I'd achieved that gold medal. So for me, I was going for the job that I come here to do.
Felt free.
But I almost felt like the pressure lifted slightly because I'd just achieved that. So that was a huge advantage. But then the interesting part was moving from Rio to 4 years later, or 5 years later, to the delayed Olympics to Tokyo. And I think it changed from being the ramped up pressure that it was in Rio, that times by 10 again. But what was kind of plonked on top of that was expectancy. And I think expectancy was quite difficult because it was different to pressure, in the sense that if you go and you do what you're expected to do, it's great, it's brilliant. But if you don't, you're kind of seen as it's not good enough and you're seen as a failure.
And now, are you sure that that's what everyone was thinking? Or are we now starting to talk about you projecting your own thoughts onto others, or were these messages coming to you crystal clear from your coaches and things?
Not from my coaches. I think from the general public, in terms of 2018 was a clear message of this. It was a year of silvers for me. So I got silver in Europeans and I got silver in Worlds, and I got slated for it in quite a few ways, because I'd seen that I failed the whole year, because I was expected to get gold because that's what I got before.
But because I didn't. Silver in a major championships is
10
like...
10 years ago, I would have grabbed it.
Yeah.
And that was it kind of hit me to think that I understand that now, and it's seen as anything less than gold isn't seen as what I should be getting.
Isn't that healthy?
Who's
seeing that?
In terms of what was going out, in terms of how it looked, in terms of headlines, in terms of everything like that, it was seen as I failed. And that's how it was. Don't get me wrong, I'm massively grateful for the amount of support, because alongside this pressure, alongside this everything, the pressure's ramped, but support has ramped up as well. Crazy amounts. You know, there's so many people out there that are rooting for me to go and perform, to do what I'm expected to do in a way. So I'm massively, massively grateful for that. But there is the flip side of that expectancy. And that on your shoulders, yeah, it's not sustainable.
You obviously do incredible amounts of physical training. You do lots of focus on nutrition and like tactics and technique and all of that. How much help or how much time were you investing in coping with these mental pressures that are coming your way?
Not a lot. And I think that's where I've learned a lot in the last year. I've been a gymnast for 22 years. And I've always kind of, which I think is a good thing, but I've almost tried to stay on the positive side of things and almost had this barrier up that if I was to ever be asked a question about anything like that, I'd almost shut it down, because I'd always want to move forward. I'd look forwards and look towards the next thing. So even if I was asked by a team selector or another coach or anything like that, like, how's your training been? Has it been good? Yeah, it's been good. Like, I'd always just be like, because I was always trying to stay on that side of it. And for me, I felt like psychologically that helped me stay positive. I was on the right track. I was doing what I was doing. But I think that got to a point, and like I said, in the last year has been a massive learning curve for me, where it wasn't sustainable, almost having that mask up. I think I didn't realise at the time, but one day that's going to come tumbling on you and it's going to start crashing. And I think it got to a point where it did. But I never thought I'd be that person that I would ever fall into a position where that all kind of crumbled on me.
When you say I never thought I'd be that person, is that because you thought that that person is a weak person, someone that struggles with the mental challenge? Is that how you'd kind of created your mindset?
Yeah, in a way. I thought, for me as a person, I've never really spoke about how I feel too much to people around me. Just never really talk too much about emotions or feeling. People laugh because I got my Tokyo gold medal, and my celebration was pretty much that. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I'm just not that type of person. Yeah. To just, on that side of things, and on the negative side of things, to just really talk too much or explain my emotions or anything like that too much. So I think that was really a really difficult thing for me to do. And I suppose in a way, yeah, I think I probably done it because I saw myself that if I did speak out about it, or I did do that, it probably was a weak thing for me to do. But I definitely had a lot to learn in that mindset that I was in, and changing that was essential.
But that's a learned behaviour in many ways, that you don't speak about your emotions, you don't show extremes of either end of the spectrum of joy or disappointment. So tell us about where you learn this idea of just bottling it up.
I don't know, but I suppose as an athlete, I've never, even when I've been in environments where it's incredible, at Olympic Games, Olympic Village, Olympic atmosphere, the home games, London, like the atmosphere is crazy. I never take anything in. So I've always been a person to almost kind of calm things down a bit, not kind of get overwhelmed by these situations that I'm, you know, these environments that I'm in, because I've always thought that actually that's what helps me as an athlete, because I'm sitting there, I'm in my zone, I'm focused on what I'm doing. And there's no doubt that that has helped me as an athlete. There's no doubt about that. But I think that's got to a point where it's almost crossing the across every emotion, and I think that's where it just didn't help me.
We often say on this podcast that nothing comes for free. So the decisions that you were making and the work you were putting in and the consistency you were showing and the medals you were winning weren't free. And the cost is something that we need to talk about. So you've already said it came crashing down.
Yeah.
Would you mind, if you're happy to talk about it, sharing for the benefit of people listening to this who may be in a similar place to where you were or where you are now, the moment that it came crashing down and the impact it had?
Yeah, 100%. I think talking about the in terms of the process as well, in terms of what made me fall into that, is really important as well, because I think after Tokyo, I always have a break after Olympic Games, and I'm fortunate enough to have been to three. I'm fortunate enough to feel like I've learned a lot and learned what I need to do to then return back to sport. So after Tokyo, I had the same mindset as I did after the other previous games, and it was take a complete break, like no exercise, nothing, complete time off and fully reflect. And there was an interesting kind of point in that period of time, because the first 3 months was amazing. It was funny because I love training, I love gymnastics, I feel fortunate to be a gymnast. I really, really do. I feel very, very lucky. But I felt a real sense of freedom. I had no ties to go to train every day. I could be at home as much as I wanted with my family, which was incredible.
Was Willow born then?
Yeah. So I loved that time of it. But I think the no ties part, and almost I basically had a sense of contentment after Tokyo. I just retained my Olympic title. I've done more than I ever could have dreamt of in sport. I never expected anything of these results, anything. And I almost felt a period where I was content. And I think contentment is a really interesting topic, because I always thought I was searching for contentment. And I think sitting here, I don't think I am. I don't think that's what I'm searching for right now, maybe in the future, but I don't think I am right now. And I think at that point, I decided that I was done. I was done with gymnastics. I'd finished.
What, because you felt content?
I think a big part of it was because I felt content. Because when I said to Scott, my coach, to people close to me, to my family, I sat down, I spoke to them. Because it's a big thing for me. I've been a gymnast for 22 years. It's my identity. It's who I am, what I do. So I sat down with people close to me and I spoke about that. I think it's my time that I'm done. And everyone was shocked, massively shocked, because no one knew it was coming. And one of my big reasons was because that feeling of content. But I almost feel like it was a false sense of contentment. And I think the real reason was because I had a massive fear of failure moving forwards. And that's how I was looking to the future, and I felt I've got a fear of failure in terms of I don't want to go, potentially try and go to the next Olympics and fail, fall off, not qualify for final. And I was almost thinking about the negative side of things, which I've never done throughout my whole career. So almost basically reflected, and that come out as I'm done. And I think that's what made my decision, which was a crazy part. And that's when it all started to wear off. So that sense of freedom, that sense of just feeling just happy, content, and doing what I'm doing, that started to wear off. And then I started to struggle. I started to really struggle. And then I started to fall into this rut where I just felt completely, completely lost. I think as an athlete, I kind of always looked forward and never looked back. And I think in this position, I'd done exactly the same. I was looking forwards and I could see nothing, basically. I remember sitting on the sofa. I was getting upset talking to Leah, my wife, and just saying that I felt like a failure. I felt like a complete waste of space, felt useless. And it's because it didn't matter what I'd done. It didn't matter what results I had or anything like that, because that was done, that was behind me. And I had the same mindset as I was when I was an athlete in terms of I'm looking forward and I feel lost. So that made me fall into this rut, and I just struggled with it. I just felt completely lost, didn't know what to do. Motivation was so low. And I think motivation for me being low was quite hard to deal with. I've always been someone that's found motivation quite easy to find throughout my whole career. Even in a sport that's quite samey day to day, I've always been motivated. I felt sluggish. I felt drained, tired every single day. I even went, Leah booked me a blood test because just to try and check things, to try and find kind of what the answer was. Everything come back fine, which I suppose was a positive. And I think it kind of, as I started talking to Leah, I started talking to my family, which took me a long time. Really long time.
How hard was that?
Yeah, really hard. And what's annoying if I look back now is that it took me too long to talk to them. Because if I'd have spoke earlier, I would have cleared up in my head how I was feeling. Because I really, at the beginning, I struggled to even know that I was even struggling, struggled to know that I was feeling any type of way. Because the first conversations I had, I was like literally stumbling on my words. I couldn't even put into words and try and get it out what I was even feeling like. I was so unclear in my own head. I think it's because I was just completely out of my comfort zone and didn't. It was so far from what I'm usually like. And I struggled with that.
Will you describe that period of where you were contentment or where you felt you were content?
Mm.
Because I'm really intrigued by that, because I think a lot of us are striving for that place. And then how, like, what did it feel like? But how did you know that in hindsight you said that it was a false sense of contentment?
It's really interesting. That's what I find it really interesting. And I think I'm still learning. So I'm coming to you today. I haven't got all the answers. And if I stumble, I'm going here and everywhere. It's because I'm still in the kind of a learning phase. But I think I had the same mindset in terms of, well, surely that's what everyone wants. They're searching for that contentment. They're searching to achieve what they want to do, be happy, content with their lives. But I think, you know, you never know, I might be at that stage when I'm a little bit older potentially. But I think right now, that's what I thought I was searching for. But I've realised I don't think I am. I think I'm more searching for the feeling of trying to push the boundaries, trying to see where I can go to. Because that's the mindset I've had through 22 years of being a gymnast. Well, you know, me and the boys always used to chat like, when do you think you'll stop? When do you think you'll retire? Everyone has those conversations. And for me, my answer was always, I want to keep going. I want to go for as long as I possibly can. And because I had that fear of failure, that what I thought was a false sense of contentment, it switched like that. 22 years having the same mindset, and all of a sudden I switch and I'm done. And I think that's crazy. And that's why I think it was a false sense of contentment, because I feel like at the moment, if I'm content, then I'm settling. Because when I had the talks with my family and my coach and everyone about me being done, I did say, like, I feel like I could do some more, but I feel content at the same time. I felt like there was always, like, people were saying to me, oh, but if you go to Paris Olympics and you achieve this, it will make this history. Or if you go to this and achieve that, it will make that history. And I almost thought, like, oh, I'm content, because I don't want to be swayed by stuff like that, because there's always going to be some more history that you can try and aim for. That will never, ever stop. So where do you draw the line? And I thought, I felt like I was searching for contentment. I felt like I found it. That's me done.
We had a fascinating conversation a few episodes ago with Dr. Rongan Chatterjee, that spoke to us around a Japanese concept called Ikigai.
Right.
That might be of interest to you with this, Max. That the context of this phrase, Ikigai, came from some research from a guy called Dan Bootler that went around communities in the world where, like, long life is prevalent, where people were living to a ripe old age, and he looked at what it was, and there were some elements of diet, lifestyle, things like that.
Yeah.
But they all had this concept of Ikigai somewhere close to it, which was people in it effectively managed to answer four questions of, what do I love doing? Yeah. What am I really good at doing? What drives my economic engine? And how can I make a difference to the world with what I'm doing?
Mm-hmm.
And he found that when you can answer those four questions, it's almost a sense of purpose that emerges.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily measured by gold medals or bank accounts. It's being the person that you're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like at the moment, I couldn't agree more. Because for me, it's all about that kind of finding that purpose and what that was, because I felt like I lost it.
What did you think it was before you lost it, though?
I always had my targets. I always had stuff that I wanted to do. I always had my. I think it was, you have your goals, but you have your journey to get there. And I think throughout the journey, that kind of gave me that purpose. I knew what I wanted to do. I knew what I wanted to try and achieve. And I could see I was making progress. I see I was making improvements. I could see I was having an effect. I was making an impact on grassroots. I was doing all this stuff. So ticking some of those boxes in terms of those questions. And I think all of a sudden, when you kind of remove what you've done for so long, 22 years of gymnastics, that was, you know, people talk about it in work, and if they stop working or they stop doing anything like that, when people retire, they get the same feeling. Like, I feel like I had that feeling, because I felt like I, for a bit, I lost my identity. So that's why I felt lost.
But on those days where your body's aching, you're exhausted, you've worked yourself to a frazzle, what got you up on the next morning to go and do the same thing again in that period where you were going and winning Olympic gold medals and doing that? What was the answer to that question?
The feeling of self-improvement and the feeling of making progression towards my goal. In kind of my peak age, I'm in the gym 35 hours a week, 6 days a week. Like my life revolved around gym from 7 years old. So for me, that was my purpose. And me going in the gym, learning new skills, doing new stuff, seeing progression in myself, but being surrounded by people are doing the same, on the same mission. Everyone's enjoying it. Like, I go in the gym and I have fun. Like, I love gymnastics. I go in the gym and I muck about. In competition, it's, you know, you have to be focused, and when you're preparing at the right times, you've got to be focused. But it's important to actually have a bit of balance and have a bit of, I have a go and I'm focused. I come off and I relax, I chill, I chat, I do whatever. I think that is what kind of provided me with that fulfillment in myself.
So which elements of those ingredients were missing?
In the last year, probably all of them in terms of that, you know, because I suppose enjoying what I'm doing. Like, I enjoyed being at home. I enjoyed, you know, I'm a home person. I love being with my family. I love spending time with my family. But I think the kind of the purpose, the making an impact, I think those things I was missing, and those things weren't getting ticked off for me.
So I can't begin to imagine how scary it feels when you've done this since 7 years old.
Yeah.
And everyone's lauded you and, you know, almost seen you as almost robotic. Do you know what I mean? You're like flawless to these people because you are the winner and you're successful, and no doubt you were the best in every age group all the way through. And then suddenly you feel empty. You can't see a future. Would you take us to the hardest moment and the darkest period before you came out the other side?
Well, I think it was probably not long before I then almost had the courage to then talk to people around me. And I think just kind of not having any motivation to do anything was tough. But I think the worst bit about it was, like, I knew that probably having more of a structure in my day would help. I knew that exercising a little bit, like, I'd done no exercise. Like, I knew that exercising would probably help. It might help me feel a bit more energized and feel better. I knew that eating better would probably help, but I lacked so much motivation, which I'm probably being too hard on myself now, but I almost look back and I'm still disappointed in myself for feeling so demotivated that I didn't even want to get up and do those three things to help myself feel better. And I think that's the worst bit about it, was I was in such a rut, I didn't even want to help myself.
But you were unwell. Like, this was a mental health episode. This wasn't laziness or...
But that's what idleness. I felt like I was. I felt like I was being lazy. I felt like I was useless. I felt like I was just a waste of space. And that was the mindset, and that was the kind of the headspace that I was in. And the hardest bit was struggling to get out of it, but not even doing anything to help myself get out of it. And that was what I absolutely hated. But I think probably being hard on myself probably drove me further, because I almost got annoyed with myself even more. At the moment, like I said, I'm still learning. I don't have all the answers, and I'm still trying to, on a phase where I'm on that massive learning curve. But I think the two things that stand out to me now in terms of what's helped is talking. I know people say it, but it's not an easy thing to do. And it wasn't easy for me, definitely. It was really out of my comfort zone. But talking to people cleared it up in my head, made me realise how I was feeling, made me get it out there, and made me almost feel more comfortable in my own skin that, you know, it is what it is. That's how I felt. And I'm not ashamed to say that I felt like that. Like, it's fine. Yeah. And then I think the second thing was almost having that, it wasn't having a structure, it wasn't exercising, it wasn't eating better. Because the moment I had a target, but almost a goal that I had, but the pathway to get there, and I think it was the pathway. I'm not going to say it was like that and I was better, because it doesn't work like that. But all of a sudden, I was a lot happier.
So what was the target you managed to find?
It was the deciding factor in terms of realizing that the reasons why I said that I was done with gymnastics was because I was scared of failing, almost turning round and flipping out on its head, and completely then talking to people around me and realizing that I'm talking about the negatives a lot about coming back to gym. Because Leah always used to talk to me when I was struggling through that period. Leah was always used to say, "You sure don't want to go and try back in the gym, or just go in and have a bit of fun?" Because I wasn't even really going in, and I was adamant. I was like, "No, I'm done." And I think the more I was talking, the more I started to flip to the positive sides of it. And I started almost ending the conversation on a positive note of coming back. And that was almost telling me something. And it was that kind of then made me feel a little bit more uplifted, more energized, because I almost had, okay, almost a challenge. Yeah. Like, it almost feels to me like a comeback in a way. Almost feels like a new challenge that I've got on my plate. I know it's going to be difficult. I'm like 6-7 years over peak. Like, I'm only getting older. Each year that goes by is a learning curve. And this year has been the biggest learning curve. I'm competing against youngsters in their prime. But now, coming out the other side in terms of having that something, but more so the pathway and the journey, and more excited and more refreshed and more willing to be open and honest and not keep up this mask of, yeah, it's all fine and dandy, let's go, let's move forwards. Almost having the feeling of, do you know what, I'm gonna give it a shot, because I think I'll never get this opportunity again. And I think it's something that 10 years, 20 years down the line, one, I feel like I've got responsibility with my little girl Willow now, that the decisions I make, I don't want it to rub off in a bad way. So if I decide that I'm done now, I truly believe that it'll be me quitting gymnastics, because it's not what I've believed in. It's not me hitting my potential, pushing the boundaries. So I don't want to quit. I never quit, and I never want to teach that lesson to Willow. The second thing is 10, 20 years down the line as well, I'll regret it. So would I look back and actually think, if I didn't just push on for another 2 years to try and go to my fourth Olympic Games and have the opportunity to do that, 100%, I look back and think, why was I so silly to not just give it a shot? And I think that's what it's all about. And I think that's where my search for, it's not searching for contentment, it's searching for, right, what am I capable of? Where can I push the boundaries to? And you never know, 10, 20 years down the line, hopefully I can look back and be and feel content with what I've done in my gymnastics career.
I love that. I think it's a really powerful distinction here, that for many of us, myself included, listening, that you can either play not to lose, or you can play to win.
Mm.
So you can either protect yourself against the losses, or you can dare to go after something big. I'm interested though in what is winning now for you? Because like you said, you've just given lots of reasons why you're going up against younger athletes. Yep. What you said, 6 or 7 years beyond what's considered to be your prime as a young athlete, you're doing fourth Olympics. You're going into a territory now that very few gymnasts have ventured. So what's your definition of winning?
I think for me, in terms of feeling like I've won now, in terms of feeling, looking back, feeling content with my career, I think it will be giving it everything, giving it my best shot, taking and grabbing opportunities, not stopping because I'm worried about what it looks like, or stopping because I'm worried about how I feel if it doesn't go to plan. Almost just pushing those boundaries and grabbing an opportunity to really try and see what I'm capable of and see where my potential can get me to, because I do feel like I've got more in the tank and I'd like to see where that can go.
Does it feel similar to that first Olympics you went to?
Yeah. I feel like fully refreshed, like fully energized, like a young Max going to try and just give it my best shot. It's crazy that it's managed to do that for myself, because that weight on my shoulders after and during Tokyo, I generally, before my feet hit the floor on that pommel horse routine, I generally said to myself, I can't believe I've just done that. And it's so easy to brush those words off, but I generally couldn't believe it. I felt like I had the weight, like huge weight on my shoulders. Yeah. And I feel like that's just completely lifted.
Wow. So I'm listening to it and it reminds me of, we had Kath Bishop on the circle that we have here with the podcast, and she speaks about this idea of the long win.
Mm.
That you don't just measure a career in terms of medals and trophies and accolades, you measure it in terms of who you became along the way.
Yeah.
And that's far more significant. And what has struck me listening to your answer here, Max, is I know that a gold medal at the next Olympics is a target, but that's not what you've referenced. It's not about winning the gold. It's about the person you're going to be for Willow when she looks at you.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, competitiveness never stops. Like, my inner competitiveness is crazy. Like, even when I'm playing a game with Willow, like, I'm competitive. Like, that never stops. Yeah, it's probably, like, it's ridiculous. But I think that's a good thing. You know, I really do. But I think, like, I think you're right. I think it's the learnings you take, who you become, the impact you're making in terms of, you know, because one of my favourite comments that I've had throughout my whole career is when I get it that their son and daughter started gymnastics because of me, started sport because of me. I think to be able to have that impact is a huge privilege, like, and one, a position I'd never, ever thought I'd be in, to be able to have that impact on youngsters out there. This now, the position that I've been in and those learnings that I've taken from that and what I'm still learning now, and I'll still be learning on this 2-year journey towards Paris 2024 Olympics, when you learn something, it means that you can also help others. And I think this is massive, because the comments that I've had, the support I've had, has been incredible, and I was really nervous about that. But I think the comments that I've had in terms of people going through that and feeling the same is crazy, and I think you can help a lot of people by talking out.
And have you come to realise that having a mental health struggle, talking about it and dealing with it, is not a weakness, as I think so many people are told, but it is actually a real show of strength?
Yeah, I have. And I've had a lot of comments to say how brave I am in talking out, and it almost felt weird to me. But I've learned that, yeah, it's, in terms of in myself, it's made me more confident. It definitely is a strength. But when you're in that position and you feel like it's a weakness, it's really hard to think of this side of it and thinking that talking out is going to be a strength of yours. It just feels like so far apart from each other. But now, yeah, 100% talking out has helped me feel more confident in terms of how I'm feeling, how I'm moving forward, more open, more honest, just being more comfortable within my own skin, being more confident with myself, with everything. And I think that's crazy. I think that's crazy for something that I thought would have the opposite effect has made me come out feeling like that. And it's real win-win. I was really nervous. I was really, really nervous about coming out. You know, I was nervous about talking today about it because it's still new for me. But I was also really, really excited, because the more you talk, the more I'm talking about it, the more refreshed I'm feeling, the more excited I'm feeling about moving forwards. And I think, like you say, for the people that that's helping, for me to have an impact in terms of helping people through this and through talking out, that's crazy for me to be in a position where I can do that.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Today's show is brought to you in association with Mindlift, the most personalized brain training app that can help improve your focus and your relaxation. So Mindlift is neuroscience based. And what I love about Mindlift, I've been using it for a while now, is that it's totally personalized to me. So if you're interested in optimizing your health, I would recommend you check out Mindlift. And don't just take my word for it. Take the word of the elite athletes and the industry leaders who use it. So Mindlift accesses brain sensing technology, games and videos that correspond to your brain's activity. Honestly, it's fascinating. You wear a smart headband which measures your brain activity and gets you a personalized routine to sharpen your mental fitness. I've been using it first thing in the morning, and genuinely, when I go into early meetings or I've got lots happening in a day, I notice the difference. I'd love you to start your personalized program at mindlift.com /high performance, and you will get $40 off your first subscription. That's MYNDLIFT.com/high performance.
I think the important thing from my perspective, though, is how can we set up sporting bodies or training or competing or even in schools, in PE lessons, young people's mindsets? How can we set people up so they don't have to get to where you got to realise that it's going to be okay?
It's a big question. I think there's so much that goes with it. I would love to sit here and say I've got all the answers to solve that. But I know there needs to be more that's done, 100%. But I think the tricky thing is that I was one of these people that never, ever thought I'd be in that position through sport, ever. Yep. So I never thought I'd be in that, fall into that rut. So for me, even if there was something out there, I probably wouldn't have gone to it or reached out for the help because I thought I'd never be that person, which is the real challenge, though.
You thought you'd never be that person, right? Yeah. That has a negative connotation. Maybe the conversation needs to be, I think if you're an elite athlete, right? Yeah. I personally believe you're more predisposed to mental health problems because you are disciplined, you're determined, yeah. you're focused, yeah. you put pressure on yourself. Yeah. You do all of these things that actually can send you closer to the edge, because that's where the success lies, but that's also where the challenge lies as well.
Yeah.
So maybe the very fact that I never thought I'd be this person,
that's the problem.
There you go.
Yeah, I completely agree. I couldn't agree more. So 100% more needs to be done, and I, like I said, I'd love to literally spill out all the answers, and hopefully over this kind of 2-year period, I'll learn more and more, because I'm guaranteed to have more conversations about it now that I've spoke out about it. I'm talking to a lot more people about it, what's helped them in a similar situation. But then also, I would 100% love to have the conversations on how we can help future generations that are coming through.
And you're the product of a very specific environment within British gymnastics, where maybe those emotions have been taught to be bottled up. Don't get too high, don't get too low, get on with it. And some of those consequences of that culture at British Gymnastics have hit the headlines over recent years for the kind of bullying or the toxicity of it. So what I'm interested in, Max, is what kind of advice would you give to people that are overseeing that culture, people within that culture that maybe could lead to different conversations that ultimately have make people easier dealing with some of these challenges?
I think it's taking more learnings on board along the way, along the journey, but really taking those learnings and putting them into place. I think it's very easy to kind of stick in old ways. And I think the constant kind of redeveloping the learning phases that we all go through, how can we take those learnings and put them into place? I think that's difficult. I think it's really difficult. But I think, you know, in terms of as a sport, we're definitely in a better position than we was. And I think that's because we're listening more. We're listening more to in terms of individuals as individuals, and I think that's what's helping us move forward, which is absolutely crucial, because everybody works differently in different ways. Everyone competes under pressures in different ways. Everyone reacts in different environments in different ways, and I think it's important to learn those. The more time we spend with individuals and listening to more about kind of the athletes and how people are feeling, the more we're going to be equipped on how to deal with different situations in the future. You can't beat around the bush, there's been some tough times for a lot of athletes within the sport. You know, it was hugely brave for those people to talk out, but I think we are looking in a better position now, and it's thanks to those people, because, you know, 10, 20, 30 years down the line, we're going to be in a better position because of those conversations and listening to those people.
So just for people listening to this, what were some of the old school practices that maybe you grew up with that you do feel need to shift?
My journey in my career, I've loved every minute of it.
Yeah.
So it's very hard for me to sit in that category, which I'm fortunate enough to do. You know, I've loved every minute of my gymnastics career. But I think one thing for me is that it's always been fun. I've always had that balance. Don't get me wrong, sport is hard, sport is intense at times. But to make sure that you have a balance of it being fun, you're being chilled, you're enjoying every moment of it is absolute key. A simple explanation of it, if you ask a child to do 10 sit-ups, it's boring. They get bored, and it's just not something that anybody wants to do in terms of that age. But if you get a child to do an activity that has the same positive effect as 10 sit-ups, and it's a game. I think that is really, really important. So for me, I've always enjoyed it. I've always enjoyed the challenge, and I've had that amazing balance of it. But I think, you know, there's, you know, been some old school ways of teaching that have stayed that way all the way through. So I think it's, again, it goes back to those learnings, those modern ways, the educating yourself on how it's best to work with youngsters, how it's best to move forwards, and how it's best to get the most out of youngsters. And also the transition from, you know, being a youngster trainer as a gymnast and as an athlete, the transition from that to a senior gymnast, it's a big jump. But the transition in between is crucial. For me, as a youngster, your coach, it has the experience. Your coach knows exactly like what we need to do, trying to get to, you know, where you want to be. But it has to work, and then has to merge into a partnership of, okay, we're both experiencing this in this situation. We're both learning. Everyone knows the best and how they're doing. And I think it's taking learnings from those pointers, working and building that relationship as a partnership to get the most out of everybody.
Well, I hope they learn a lot from the experience that you've gone through in the past little while.
Mm.
You said you do 36 hours a week in the gym.
I used to.
How many hours would you work on your mental health in those 36?
Zero. Yeah.
And how many times in your career has someone come to you and said, well done, won a gold medal, go and decompress with a psychologist or a therapist?
So the interesting part of it is that support has been there.
But you didn't take it?
No.
But this is where I think we have to help our athletes and say, listen,
100%.
You let us make the decision for you, right? You know, when it comes to, doing press-ups before you start, you know, lighting your warm-up, it's a non-negotiable, right? You can't say, I don't fancy doing the press-ups. Yeah. I'm just going to go straight onto the pommels. Yeah. We need to have the same mindset for people working with psychologists. It's non-negotiable. If you're going to be an athlete competing for Team GB, you have 5 hours a week with a therapist, with a psychologist. You share your feelings.
But what's hard is I didn't realise until I was in that rut.
And because you're not meant to realise, but the people who run your sport, who see you now sitting here saying I was maybe a day from retiring, they must see.
Yeah.
And they must change.
But I think it was me. It was me, because I almost had that kind of, I wanted to come across the right way, but in feeling of what I'm doing is working.
Hmm. I know what you mean.
And I didn't want to muck with
that. You're there to protect yourself, right?
Yeah, and I didn't want
to... But they're there to protect you as well.
100%, I couldn't agree more. They're the experts in it, and 100%, there will be psychologists that will be screaming at me because they'll be thinking I could have come to them.
Yeah.
They could have helped me. And 100% it would have, because for me, I've realised that actually, you know, throughout that time talking, and no doubt that talking and getting it out there about how you're feeling, and me bottling it up and putting a mask on the whole way through, me talking about that would have probably stopped it crumbling at a certain period of time. 100%, I couldn't agree with you more. But for me, my mindset was, I don't want to interfere or change something that's working for me. And I'm on that pathway.
I get it.
And I want to keep it going.
So when you won an Olympic gold, this is one of our favourite questions, what percentage of it was down to technique and physicality? And how much of it would say was down to your mindset and the psychology?
It's a tricky one. I think in the very moment of performing a routine, it's pretty much probably 90% up there.
90% mental.
Physically, you can do all the work, and you know, the whole build up, we roughly do a 3-month build up towards building towards any competition, no matter if it's a small comp or Olympic Games, it's the same. It comes back to consistency. But I think that, yeah, physically, obviously mentally, and that part of it has to be right. But physically, that's tough. Building the kind of the stamina, the endurance, the fitness to get to that kind of peak condition where you need to be to compete. When you're out there, especially when you're a couple of minutes out before you compete, there's nothing more you can do. Like, it's done. Even week, 2 weeks out, there's not really much more physically you can do. You're there, whatever level you're at, that's what you're at. So I think then it's a mental game. And that's where you see in sport, especially, but in any pressured environment, the most talented people in the world that would win every day in the training gym crumble under that pressure, because it's a mental game. That's what's hard about sport, because it's cutthroat. You could have these amazing athletes, best in the world, best, like literally would win train every day, but it won't be that person all the time that wins on the day of the competition, because you have to be able to compete. And those people that can't compete could be the best gymnasts in the world, but they've never got to show it.
So take us with you in those moments before you get the call. Come on, you've got to perform.
Yeah.
Take us inside your mind at that moment to give us an understanding of, because you have learned to cope with it, whether you got help or support or not, you've found a method to be able to execute. What's going on?
I go through a routine on what I do every time. Before that pummel routine that I meant to perform, whether it's in my gym back at home, the warm-up, everything that goes into it, the way I'm chalking up, the way I step up to the handles, the way I present, the way I start my routine, everything is literally trying to mirror what I do in the gym, what I do every single time. So for my head, I'm literally, okay, I've done my warm-up. I'm now walking through whatever the process is, wherever you have to go. I don't talk much throughout that time. Go through, Scott knows how I work now. We both work like literally amazingly together. We both walk through, we know how to work, we work the best. I go through, I'm not even really thinking about almost the routine too much. I couldn't even tell you what I'm thinking about, but almost I'll try and probably not think about much at all. Blank my mind in a way as much as you possibly can, because you don't want to let things creep in that could change what you've done. You know, I've just built up a lot of confidence because hopefully, and they did, those warm-ups have gone spot on. Warm-ups perfect, perfect, perfect. I get there, everything's smooth. I go, I sit there, I wait. I go, I do a routine. So everything's in line, everything's consistent. And I think for me in my head, that's massively important. And like I said, I go up there to compete a routine. I truly believe that what surrounds that, if that's a routine, my performance is going to be more consistent if what I do surrounding it is consistent. If you're faffing around and you're doing this and that, you're not going to approach it with the same mindset. You're not going to approach it with the same mentality. But for me, I try and do that every single
time. So are you in flow at that point?
I'm kind of in autopilot, in a zone.
Yeah, because Johnny Wilkinson was with us and he said, you know, he said you see it with kickers in rugby. He said they're in the flow, they're playing the game, they're totally in the game, and then they win a penalty and suddenly they stand upright and they start having tics and they start breathing differently. And he's like, they've gone straight into a red brain. They've left flow completely and now it's not natural, you know?
And a really interesting point is that I've had to learn that. So that doesn't come naturally. I think that is massively a learned thing, because there was definitely times, competitions and experiences where I've had where things have massively put me off.
Like what?
I don't know if I've ever told this story. World Championships 2014. I had a lot of external pressures. I had a lot of pressure on my shoulders. I was kind of working my way up through the ranks. And I had my tracksuit on. I went to the toilet and it was in China. Chinese toilets are very, very different in a lot to our toilets. Literally a hole in the floor. And for me being so routine, so structured, I look back and think it's so perfect. I got a wee on my trousers. It threw me. It threw me massively. Because then I took my trousers off, I'm wearing different stuff. It wasn't my routine. It wasn't kind of what I'd almost planned. And it sounds crazy, but that threw me off big time. I don't think I've really told many people that.
And what happened to your performance?
It suffered from it. I didn't make final. I was very lucky because certain scenarios happened that I managed to then, you know, an injury on the team meant that I'd actually go in to the final. But that was pure luck. And almost, I didn't want to go into that final. I remember sitting there saying, I don't want to do it because I didn't deserve it. And I went in. I done it. I come out with silver, my best result to date at that time. But the qualification one was when that happened through me. Completely mucked up.
A friend of mine was telling me recently, he said, we get caught up in this talk of marginal gains.
Yeah.
But we never talk about marginal losses. Because if you think everything's there to be gained, that gives you that little percentage point.
Yeah.
Those things are also there that can take away a percentage point. And, you know, like whether it's, like the example he was using is, if you told athletes for years, keep your feet up when you're not competing, and then you send them to the Olympic Village and the canteen is a kilometre walk away,
yeah,
that then starts to play havoc with your sense of routine, that I shouldn't be doing this, and you're panicking.
I talk about how consistent it is, my routine, all that stuff, but I've had to learn that it can only be based on what you can control. It really can be. So if you can tick those things off to help you get in a routine, help you be in the right mindset to go out and compete under like crazy pressures, then that's great. But you have to, and I've learned from situations like that story, you have to be able to be adaptable at the same time. You have to.
Yeah.
You have to be able to learn from that, be able to adapt, and at certain times, be flexible and go with the flow with it, but also have your structure at the same time.
See, I'm excited for you because I think Paris 2024 is going to be the first time that you're able to compete on the biggest stage of all with freedom.
I hope so. And for me, I feel the same in a way in terms of I'm refreshed, I'm energized. Like I said, I feel like a young Max going into competitions. I cannot wait. I'm literally genuinely excited. I feel like from going from the decision to making that I'm done to then feeling like now I'm coming back, and I actually almost feel like I'm massively lucky to be in a position where I can continue. I have an opportunity here and I want to grab it. So you know, I'm genuinely excited, refreshed that I can kind of do this 2-year push to Paris, but on the journey, be more open and honest with myself, yeah, with everyone, and just, you know, if I'm going and preparing for a competition and it isn't going to plan, it's what it is.
And take those sessions with the psychologist, by the way. We're going to finish with our quick fire questions, if you don't mind. The first one is, what are the 3 non-negotiable behaviours that you and the people around you have to buy into?
That inner competitiveness that I told you about.
Yeah.
That's key. Commitment from myself, from my team. Everyone's got to be in it and have that commitment there. And I think what I spoke about there, be able to compete under pressure. Like I said, some of the most talented people never get to show what they're actually capable of.
What advice would you give to a teenage Max just starting out?
Go to psychologist. I suppose accept help when it's offered, even if you feel like you don't need it. You know, be more open and honest. I understand the point of what I mentioned in terms of if something's working, don't interrupt it. But I think it's good to have people around you that actually are experts that potentially may have seen this happen before. Can read situations like this and also think potentially, right, the mindset of this potentially may not be sustainable. So almost arm yourself for every scenario, but give yourself the opportunity to be armed with that. For me, I rode on through like it was fine and dandy, and that's where it didn't work out.
Is there one book, podcast or something that you would recommend to our listeners to delve into that's helped you in your mindset over the years?
I went through a stage of listening to Gary Vee. So Gary Vaynerchuk quite a lot, and I think his morals, his beliefs, his work ethic, but also trying to find something and making sure that people find something that they love, they enjoy, I think is key. I think he puts a lot of things into perspective. He did for me in various occasions. And I think we're in a world now where I truly believe opportunities are endless. I think we're in a world where you can afford to do something that you do have a passion for, that you do love, and that you can make it sustainable to make that your living, because we're in a world where, like I said, it's opportunities are there. I think that's an amazing place to be in.
If you could go back to one moment of your life, what would it be and why?
Whenever I ask this, I always think about the first thing that comes to mind is my wedding day. The memories from that, everyone there, one place, incredible day. Like, we put everything in to make sure it was everything that it could possibly be. But I think there's a moment on your wedding day when you sit at the top table and you just look out. And I think that's a surreal moment, but almost an amazing moment to look back on and think that was a time, a day where everybody was there, all had an amazing time. And I think if you could replay that, I would. So that's the one that comes to mind, first thought.
This one is for all those young gymnasts dreaming of being the next Max Whitlock, and we need a really honest answer to this. When you won your first gold medal, how long did the thrill last before you moved on to the next one?
In a way, not that long, but in a way, forever. I think for me, like I said, I forget about results and I move forward. So in terms of that, the initial thought process and the initial kind of amazing feeling of achieving what you never thought you would, or achieving the pinnacle or your dream, probably a few weeks. But then if you move on and you go to the next thing, it goes to the back of your mind. But at the same time, it's never, ever going to be taken away from you. And I think that's what I realised. So you can always look back at that moment and it will always be there. So in a way, not for long.
Yeah. Johnny Wilkinson said that winning the Rugby World Cup lasted 30 seconds for him.
30 seconds. Yeah.
Because you guys are made up in that way, you know, where it's... And the reason why I ask the question is because I want young athletes or any young person to realise that this is about the process. It's about the journey. It's not about the destination. If you spend your life waiting to be happy when you win that thing, you'll be waiting.
100%. And it was funny because me and the boys have had this conversation and it almost is a way and a technique of taking pressure of yourself. And I think it could be quite good for people if they struggle with pressure. And I think it's, if you think about that, and you think about, well, if it goes amazing, it's almost forgot about in a couple of weeks after. But it's exactly the same if it doesn't go to plan.
Yeah.
It's forgotten about a couple of weeks after and you can move forwards, move on. I think when you think about that, I think it puts a lot of things into perspective. And then all you can do is just go and, do you know what, you can give it your best shot and that's it. That's all anyone can ask of you. That's all you can be expected of. And that's all that you actually can do on that day.
Lovely.
So with that in mind, what's your one golden rule for our listeners to live a high performance life?
Never think you've got it all figured out. I think no matter how successful you are, no matter how much you've done, you can always learn that golden nugget of bit of information from anybody with any experience, any knowledge or any lack of experience behind them. So never take anyone for granted because you can learn something from everyone. And nobody is better than anyone else.
Love that.
Fantastic. Damien.
Jake.
That was a fascinating conversation because he's almost had no time to process it, has he? He's kind of still in the midst of this.
Yeah, and he's told us that, you know, but I think there's a beauty there in allowing us into that thought process. He's not presenting this as some beautifully packaged way of thinking. It's something that he's walked into a room and he's exploring, he's discovering, and that is almost more powerful.
I do get a sense, though, that what he's saying and doing is going to prevent other people or help other people who are either on the same path or might end up on the same path. But I also think that we need to do something to totally change the mindset, not just of him, but of all young people in this country, that, you know, when he says, I decided not to do the work with the psychologists or the therapists, that's because no one told him that it is as important as the press-ups and the pull-ups and the stretching. And, you know, it should be a vital part of his training. It should be a vital part of everyone's training, no matter what their walk of life.
Yeah, I mean, in Max's world, there can only be one Olympic champion in a discipline at any one time. So by definition, there's lots of people that, if that's our only criteria of success, there's lots of people that fail. Whereas I think what meeting with therapists, psychologists and the psychiatrists that can help him understand this, it's not about what you achieve, it's who you become in the process that's more significant. And I think that's where Max's journey over the next 2 years is going to be utterly fascinating to watch, the person that he becomes on this quest. Not to, whether he wins an Olympic gold medal or not, he's already won by the fact that he's decided that he's going to stretch himself, he's going to go beyond his comfort zone. And that's where we need to shift the focus of our attention, not on whether he's on the podium in Paris in 2 years' time or not.
Yeah. Life's funny, isn't it, though? I mean, all the things that he thought he was setting himself up to be successful with and that were helping him be successful are also the very things that undo you. You know, they've undone him in a mental sense.
Yeah.
But also, like, that story, that amazing story he told us where he got a bit of urine on his trousers and it totally derailed him. And that's because he thought that having that strict, rigid approach to everything was gonna give him success, which it will, until everyone's got a plan to get a punch in the face, right, as was famously said. So actually, freedom is where people will find true success and a success that's got a real foundation to it because it can't be derailed.
Yeah, it's a really powerful point. I love that example of him because when we're talking about, we get caught up in this view that marginal gains is where it's at. But again, we look at marginal losses and the detrimental effect that can have. And I think when we can almost overcome both of them by having both the discipline for the stuff we can control, but the flexibility to go with it. You know, we've said loads of times that it's nice to have a clear focus on where you want to get to, but it's equally nice to be flexible on the route that you choose to get there. Is a really good example of what Max, or the place that Max is now in.
Well, I'm sad for him. He went through it, but I'm happy for him that he's emerged the other side in the way that he has. And I think it's going to be fascinating watching what happens next for him.
Yeah, and I hope there's a lot of listeners out there that it has the same effects that it's had on us in the immediate aftermath of it, that it makes us stop and pause and reflect a little bit on this narrative that, you know, first is first and second is nowhere, and some of these old aphorisms that often get banded about, and start to see that it's who you become in the process of going after your goals that is actually the true definition of high performance.
Thanks, mate.
Loved it. Thanks, mate.
And don't forget, if you want to hear what was said when the microphones carried on rolling, we have a subscription service, High Performance Plus. Our premium service brings you even more from our high performance guests. It's time to meet another high performance listener, this time someone on the other side of the planet from where we are. Hey, Dan.
Hi, Jake. How are you?
Very well, thanks. I will permit the 1 second delay between us and you because I'm in Norwich, Damien's in Manchester, and you are in...
Melbourne, Australia.
So why are you on High Performance? Tell us everything.
Oh, well, yeah. So I bumped into Damien in Manchester. You were having lunch with your family, weren't you, Damien, just outside? And
that's right, yeah.
I sort of walked past and I was with my brother and I said, I think that's Damien from High Performance. And it was one of those things, and Jake, this is actually one for you as well. I actually walked past you once outside BBC Television Centre, and I didn't go over and say thank you for the podcast. This is years ago as well, so this was early days of the podcast. And I sort of thought to myself, always, I regret not going over and saying thank you.
Thank you for what, though, Dan?
Randomly, it's changing my life, honestly. The pod, absolutely. You used to be saying the pod as well. I never used to say that. It has absolutely changed my life. It completely changed my mindset. The person I was when I started taking in this content compared to the person I am now, and all the people that you've spoken to in between, and the incredible differences between them, but then the incredible similarities between them as well, has massively changed my mindset and the way I sort of approach my life.
So for context, Dan, you're an actor by training, yeah, and a comedian as well. So tell us about, when you say about changing your life, tell us a little bit around your own journey.
Absolutely. So I studied a politics degree, and then I moved from politics degree into working for businesses, working in sales. I was always told, oh, Dan, you know, you can talk to people, go and work in sales. So I did. And then I sort of got on that ladder, and I was working with people, and I was surrounded by people, and I was enjoying it and enjoying the culture and enjoying earning money, but I was never fulfilled. I always loved performing. Ever since I was a kid, I've always been a performer. I've always loved making people laugh. It's always been the number one thing that I love to do. And I always wanted to make my own comedy. And I had somewhat of an acting career. I was represented, all this kind of thing. But my focus was never on that. And unsurprisingly, I was full of excuses as to why that was. And then this podcast effectively became, I know, Damien, you've spoken about this in the before, it became one of my monkeys, these five monkeys that we all have. The podcast became one of those, and it allowed me to take personal responsibility over what I was doing and reflect, and hearing the people that come on this podcast speak so incredibly honestly about themselves encouraged me to look at myself and be honest with myself. And why am I where I am? Well, it's because of my actions. Here's how I can change it. So then from that, I've kind of turn in what I'm doing. I'm no longer working in that kind of environment anymore, and I'm making my own comedy and releasing it twice a week.
It reminds me of, like, when we met Russell Kane on one of the live shows that we did and put out on a podcast, he spoke about that moment when people come over and say to him, I'd love to be a comedian like you. And he says to him, it's the equivalent of, go over to that exercise equipment in the gym, go and work on it for 2 years, and then come back and we'll see where you are then. It's that idea of having to actually do the work, of learn your craft. And so what are the key messages in that journey of you deciding to pursue this career and set up your comedy channel then, Dan, that you think our listeners might benefit from understanding?
Well, I mean, there's so many, aren't there? And I mean, it's almost referencing the ones that I've learned on here. And I think the biggest one for me was failure. And that's the biggest thing, I think, within performance. And I learned that from this podcast, for people that aren't in performance. I know we've had a number of people that are performers. You know, you've had the almighty Matthew McConaughey, haven't you? But it's all the people in business. It's all the people in sport that come in and talk about failure. And, you know, I release a video and it could absolutely flatline. It could do nothing. And originally that was the most daunting aspect of starting anything like this. What if I tell a joke on the internet that I can never get back and no one finds it funny? And I mean, that happened last week. I took a mick out of Duolingo and no one found it funny, but I'm no longer afraid of that. And when I first started, it was terrifying, absolutely terrifying. But it taught me to sort of, what's that? It's the quote that Damien said a number of times, give up your love of money and your fear of death. I would say the high performance version of that is give up your love of money and your fear of failure, and then you can live freely. And I feel like it's the biggest lesson for me.
Brilliant. Where can people find your work, Dan?
At Daniel Robert Lockett, all one word, on Instagram is where I'm currently releasing everything.
I love it, Dan. When I've seen it ever since we met, I have a look at it and I think you're incredibly talented. So, and I can see that you're developing as well. So that's brilliant.
Very kind words. Thank you, Damien.
Well, how about that then for a powerful guest and a powerful conversation? Max, on behalf of the whole team, thank you so much for being brave enough to come on and be as honest as you were. You know, I think often sports stars are okay to talk about their challenges and their struggles when they've retired because it feels a bit safer. But for someone who is in the middle of his career, for someone who is still competing, for someone who is looking forward to a big challenge of the next Olympics, for you to come on here and talk as you did, I know will help so many people. So thank you, Max. And if you've been touched by what you heard today, please spread the learnings you're taking from these conversations. That's what can make a real difference to the world. Thanks to the whole team of Finn and Hannah, Will, Eve, Gemma, Callum, and many other people. Remember, there is no secret, okay? It is all there for you. So chase world-class basics. Don't get high on your own supply. Remain humble, curious, and empathetic. And we'll see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.